Hello, hello, you guys, and welcome back to a new episode of Listen Bitch Presents. Tell me why you are special. Today we are in the arena. This is the show where real humans get the mic, not because they have all their shit together, but because they have the guts to keep going when everything in them says to stop. My guest today is someone who has lived inside the kind of darkness that most of us only hear about. He survived an attempted murder, lost everything, savings, identity, sense of safety through betrayal. He's battled the PTSD, the binge eating, self-sabotage. We're going to relate on this so well, that part anyway, for nearly a decade.
Yes.
He's fought his way out. And guess what, you guys? No magic formula, no magic pep talk, okay? But like real hard-won transformation. There's a lot of things I can say about him, but I'm going to stop talking because I want him to talk about himself. So, Jonathan McClendon, thank you so much and welcome to the arena.
Hey, thank you. And I often think if someone was to tell me when I was, I don't know, 18 years old or something, hey, here's what the next 25 years of your life are going to look like, I probably wouldn't believe you. I'm glad that it has unfolded the way it is. And a lot of the hard stuff I wouldn't take out of my past. So we look at this and we go, like, you talked about having a magic formula or magic pillar, a way out. And it's very natural for us to kind of want that. But when I look back, I go, I actually gained a lot from these. Not that I would ask for it, not that I would do it again if I don't, I really don't want to. But I wouldn't do what I do today. I wouldn't be where I am today, except that these experiences have shaped who I am and like who I've become.
Okay, that's so crazy because, like, usually in this show, I look for the magic moment where I can say, like, that's what makes you special. Like, I can see it. So I just want to say, like, that right there, being able to go through all the things, because, I definitely, my trauma was definitely not close to what your trauma was, but I know trauma. And I know, everything that's ever happened to me and anybody that's played a part in something that was meant to destroy me, I'm thankful. I would do it all over again. I don't want to, but 100%, I would do it all over again to be exactly where I am right now. So that, you guys, your mess is your message, and that thing, that hard thing, like Jonathan took that and he's the boss of that now. And I think that's incredible.
It took a while, though, just to be clear. It would be nice to be like, oh yeah, this thing happened, and a year later I was great. Now this was probably a decade of like serious like struggles. A lot of time spent in trying to figure out again who I am, trying to figure out my relationship to God. Like, what does it mean to be a Christian? Like, when a Christian betrayed me, when people tried to kill me, like, why is this happening to me? Things like that. And so, why do I try to pray and stare into blackness? Why do I feel like I'm being swallowed up by darkness? Why, what is peace in all of this? Different things like that. So, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but it's, I remember one time I went to pray, and yeah, it was like I shut my eyes and just felt like this blackness was washing over me. And like, I couldn't, I felt no connection. And I was like, why? And it was like, almost like a voice said, this has to leave a mark. And I didn't understand what that message was at that point in time. I think I do now because of what I do professionally, which I was probably doing in some context even back then. But it's, I say that I'm a coach, so I'm a health coach, and I have lots of pieces of paper with my name on it, is what I'd say to people. When you have ADHD, you collect, what is it, certifications or like Pokemon cards or something. But it's, you can have a lot of book knowledge, but it's not that useful if you don't have embodied knowledge as well. And so it's like when somebody comes to me with something they're struggling with, I'm not just like, oh yeah, I've read about this, I kind of know what the steps are to do this. It's like I can sit with you in this experience and witness with you in this experience because I know exactly what it feels like to live it. So you know that I'm not coming to you with like platitudes. I'm a very real human who's comfortable sitting with people in like the worst of their messes, basically.
And I think that relatability is another thing that makes humans special. The humans that, don't end up taking on that victim mentality. It's, I would trust someone who's been through the mess before I would trust someone who will never ever say that their life was difficult or unco that, I mean, there's a lot of polished Instagram princesses in the world, and especially when it comes to
There is.
Christianity. Like I see through it and I'm like, no, that's not real life. Like it's, the
Well,
person that's really been through it, I can relate to the most.
I'm a Canadian, and so we sort of look at the US in a different way, I
Yeah.
guess. When you grow up not thinking your country is the center of the world, you just kind of grow up with a different mentality. Canadians aren't always as nice as people think they are. It's nice to have that reputation,
Yeah.
but it's not always true either. But I think even Christianity is kind of like different in Canada. There's not so much sort of empire building and what I'll call like triumphalism and things like that.
Yeah.
And what I think about is like Jesus didn't come to overthrow the Roman government. The Jews wanted him to, but
Yeah.
that he said that's not what this is about because my kingdom is not of this world, he said. And his call was actually to endure, to go through the hardship, to go through the hard stuff, and not just for the sake of suffering, but I'm like, who wrote it? Like, you think I know my Bible a bit better, but like, suffering must precede the glory. I was like, is that in Romans? but it's like, this life is going to be like a crucible. It's not going to be like, when Peter grabbed a sword and took an ear off of someone, he said, put that away. That's not what this is about. The cup that I'm going to drink,
Yeah.
that's what I have to go and do. And so it's not that we seek out suffering to wear that like a badge of honor, but
Right.
suffering is inevitable. And suffering can produce two things. Like it can produce hardness and bitterness, or it can produce wisdom and it can produce strength.
Exactly. And I think, obviously, the state of the United States right now, we need that. There's a decision right now. You can be a victim and freak out that the world is on fire and it feels like it's upside down, or you can rebel against every system known to man, because we're not here to fight the devil. That's God's job. We call out the evil and then we do the best thing we can to rebel and step into our potential. So how can you do that? You take care of yourself mentally, physically, financially. Become the best version of yourself. That's our job here, and that's not going to be easy. Like, you're always going to be swimming upstream, So, yeah, I love that. And now
There's enough
I'm.
evil in the world. I was gonna say, there's just enough evil in the world that if you tried to take it all on, like your nervous system literally can't handle it.
Can't.
It doesn't matter how loud I scream, it doesn't matter how angry I get, it doesn't matter how many times I post on social media, how many times it gets shared, things like that. It's not that I don't, I do speak, I use my voice, but evil is always going to be present in a world that has rejected God. And so you could sit here and you could just say, but the thing is, God sees all of this. One example I give is people want to say, well, God's a tyrant because he sent the Jews to go in the children of Israel to go and like take out various nations when they were conquering the land of the Old Testament. Said, well, you don't know what God was watching for 400 or 500 years when they were in Egypt. And the fact that he watched it for 400 or 500 years before he sent them, an imperfect people, by the way, to be an instrument of judgment, not because they were perfect, but because they were called to do this thing. And so when he watched people sacrifice to other gods, to sacrifice children, to carry out horrible rituals, like we think some of the stuff that's being revealed now is awful. I'm like, have a read of a history book.
It's been here forever.
Like, this is not new. It's just that we've enjoyed quite a civilized existence, and life was quite brutal. But God, because God is long-suffering and just, he watched this happen. It's not that he approved it, but God is not willing that any should perish. Because if we understood the reality of like eternal damnation, I don't know that we would wish it on people. It says God takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked, so why should we? It doesn't mean we don't mourn it. It doesn't mean that we don't feel angry. It doesn't mean that we're like, oh, I should go be best friends with the serial killer. But it means like we shouldn't take pleasure in this.
No, I totally love that. And my audience is listening to this and they're like, wow, does he listen to all of Brandon's shows? Because he's probably talking to her right now. So, you guys, welcome to church. I love
That's funny.
this. I love this. And it's not the direction I thought the conversation was when it was gonna go, but I am definitely here for that. I'm here for this. This is amazing. Like, it's
I was
incredible.
just rolling with where we started. But if there are aspects of the story that you want to share with your audience, of course, they're very comfortable talking about that as well. The hard stuff that we go through. So, was there anything particularly you wanted to dive into?
Well, I mean, we're off the rails, but let's get back on the rails, because I do love this conversation. I love this conversation, and I love the fact that, I want you guys to hear that part where, God is there and he is watching, and part of why he's watching is because he wants us to use our voices. Okay, because not everybody that needs to know about Jesus knows about Jesus. And that is our calling, to be talking about that relationship, and talking about how much he loves you. So I do think that's important. I want you guys to be very aware of that and everything that's going on. So you're like, why is God letting all the suffering happen? Babe, he's trying to save you. and your brothers and your cousins and your sisters and your uncles, like there's one person out there that he'll watch the world burn for how long to save them. And that's kind of how it goes. Okay. So
Well,
he
think about it
wants.
like this as well.
Yeah.
Because we'll ask this question: if God is good, why does evil exist?
Yeah.
Well, I got a couple kids,
Yeah.
right? And every time we produce children, we take a risk.
Yeah.
Somebody produced someone that became, a genocidal maniac, that became a, a horrible person. There's many wonderful people, but it's always a crapshoot because, like, at the moment of conception, like 200 plus genetic traits are already encoded in that person. Regardless of how, yes, environment matters, but like all of that potential is already loaded at the moment of conception. So every time you create life, there is a risk when you create life that has a free will. And God is willing to accept that risk when he created humans. That,
Yeah.
hey, because ultimately people think, I say, God is not a tyrant. If God was a tyrant, he would say, you have to obey me. Like, and people say, well, where is God? Why doesn't he show himself to us? Well, because we'd be destroyed if we actually can't stand in his literal presence. And
Well, I mean,
so
he did
instead,
show himself to people and they killed him. So my
yes.
thing is like he is everywhere and he has shown himself. If you're willing to look, he's in everything. He is in
But
everything.
you have to look.
Yeah, you have to look and you have to be willing. And anybody who thinks that he is a tyrant has not read the Bible. Like I thought I knew what love was, right? I'm a very loving person, probably the most loving person I know in my whole life. That's me. And I had kids and that quadrupled. And I'm like obsessed. I'm just, I love love. And I never really knew what it was until probably my second year into reading the Bible. Now I'm into my third, and like however much I thought he loved me my whole life is nothing compared to like how much he loves me, everything he's written, and he loves you the same. Like everything he's done, everything he's written, that Bible from cover to cover is for you. And that's crazy to me. Everything he's done out of love. There's nothing in the world that can ever compare to that. It's not even something you could put into words. I can't describe that feeling.
I
It's
think love sometimes it's helpful to clarify some things around love too, because I think the concept of love has been greatly distorted, particularly
Yes.
in modern times, and into like some sort of romantic ideal, like playing your guitar under a window with a, a bouquet of flowers to
Yeah.
give to some girl. I'm like, this is infatuation. This isn't love. I'm not saying don't be romantic with your spouse or your partner. I've been married for 20 years.
Right.
But this idea, greater love hath no man than he laid down his life for his friends.
Yeah.
This is love. Not I'm so thrilled about like what we're going to consummate.
Yeah.
It's I will literally die for you.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of love. There's a deep gravity and a deep weight to that. I mean, the Bible says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Well, literally, what did Jesus do?
Died
He
for it.
laid down his life. So what are we as men called to do? It's not that we go and seek this out, but we literally, through our sacrifice, win the hearts of our spouses,
Yeah.
right? Our wives. Through our sacrifice, not through romantic gestures. And again, I'm not saying that if my wife
Right.
hears this, I'm like, hey, I'm not saying romantic gestures don't
Right.
count. But I'm saying genuine love has a weight, a depth, a gravity to it that goes far beyond sort of the shallow surface level things that we are shown.
Yeah. And I do think I love that you're saying this because another thing that I think has really been distorted is acceptance. Like we mistake loving people by accepting stuff that's not real, and we sign off on a lot of people's bullshit
Emotions.
is the biggest word I can say. And I'm telling you guys right now that love is truth. Love means telling people the truth. It is telling them the truth. And what happens? The truth hurts. It does. And the truth makes people really angry. That's
So
love.
let's use an example from the Bible. So
Yeah.
there's a couple of different examples of this where let's say the woman that was caught in adultery who had committed sin worthy of death.
Yeah.
And and Jesus went to her, but he could see her heart, and he said, like, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase here, by the way, just
Yeah.
so everyone's clear. I know why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're trying to meet a need that you can't meet through this pattern of behavior.
Yep.
Let me help you. And so we know that, like, some people want, again, they want to view God as this vengeful God who's sitting here with a hammer waiting to crush you. And nothing could be further from the truth. Although our conception of God is often shaped by our fathers. This is a really interesting thing. I have a background in psychology and neuroscience too. Our conception of God is often shaped by how we experience our fathers, whether we want it to be that or not. And so if we had like punitive fathers, if we had fathers who are very strict, very rule-based, very discipline-oriented and things like that, it shapes our perception of what God is. And then we look at various religious denominations and what that produces as well, right? So because many religious denominations were also formed as a form of hierarchical control. How do you maintain control, right? Through fear. And so, but instead we actually see, well, what is the love of God? Your sin has made you worthy of death. However, I'm going to save you. I don't actually want you to die in your sin. I don't want you to die lost. And that's a really powerful message to see. So when someone is struggling with something, you're right, telling them the truth is important because you don't want them to die lost and in their sin. And yes, truth in a sense hurts, but I say we can receive a hard message if we know the heart of the messenger. And this is really important as well. If I'm saying you're a piece of garbage and I hope you die and I hate you, that's not going to land very well. But if it's like, hey, yeah, what you're doing, how you're living is hurting you. It's hurting you badly and it has a bad end to it. I'm not saying you are a bad person. I'm saying I see your struggle and I'd like to help you in that struggle. But instead, we've glorified the self in such a way that it's like everything I believe is truth, my truth, your truth. No, truth isn't this thing that gets batted about. With one of the things, if I find great courage with God, truth is really hard to bump into because it doesn't bend, it does not change. And so we as humans, we bump into like the very truth of God and we go, ow, this is really hard. This is rigid. This is unbending. But yet it's the very thing that we anchor to because in a world that's filled with chaos and constant change and disarray, this will not change. It is eternally true. That's a wonderful thing. I used to, not like the holiness of God because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not that. But that's okay because my confidence is not in me. My confidence is in God and the very holy, just, righteous nature of God. I'm like, who else would I ever want to be my judge than the one who is just, holy, and righteous and wants to save us and does not want us to die lost in our sin?
And that's the whole point. None of us are worthy. None of us are worthy of what he did, and he did it anyway so that we have a chance at life. So I love this. And I am just, I think you're incredible, Jonathan. I think you're awesome. I'm loving this conversation. And in the back of my head, because I do have a neurospicy brain, so I have like seven conversations going while you're talking.
Jibber.
And so number one, you guys, I don't know if I even said this in the beginning, but right now Jonathan is in Africa, right?
Australia, sorry.
Oh, Australia. Okay. But something happened in Africa. So I know you've been in Africa, and then you're like, I'm from Canada. So I want to know
Yes.
how what's going on. You're everywhere in all the places.
I'm fortunate that I do work for myself, so I'm a virtual health coach in my professional life. And so I have the freedom to work for myself, set my schedule. It's not as glamorous as it sounds, by the way, just to let people know. I've been doing this for over 20 years, on and off. And so I'm married to an Australian, so we come over here to escape the cold Canadian winter for 3 months of the year. And I work remotely while I'm over here. And so we have sort of built our life around being mobile and being able to travel. That's kind of just a part of what we do. It's a commitment that we made. This is the thing we love. We love to travel. Our kids have been. Well, they've been to a lot of places. I don't want to put numbers up there because I don't want to make it sound like I'm bragging. But our kids have been to a lot of countries as
That's
well. They
amazing.
probably won't remember most of them, to be fair. But they're getting to experience the world whether they want it to or not. I'll give you just one little example. We were visiting a friend. Here's a very random one, actually. So, a guy reached out to me by email, and he's like, "Hey, I saw your last name, McLernan," which I would say if if McDonald's had a school and I was a student, I'd be McLernan. That's kind of how he said it.
That's great.
But he said, "I saw your last name. Are you related to this guy named Dave?" And I was like, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's my dad, probably." He said, "Well, I knew your dad in New Zealand 50 years ago." So what? And long story short, so one of the times we were in Australia, we weren't able to connect with him. But then another time, we were able to go and connect and meet this guy who knew my dad like in his 20s, like he used to come to their farm in New Zealand or something like that. I'm like, this is wild. It was very interesting to meet someone who actually knew my dad when he was like 20 before he had kids and stuff. Like, tell me about my dad. Like, what was he like before he was a grumpy old man? So we're at this guy's place, and my boys are like pushing suitcases down the stairs. I have two boys. And you're like, what on earth are you doing? Like pushing your suitcases down the stairs. Well, they're playing airport is what they're doing. And they're being like luggage conveyors
Okay.
and they're shoving suitcases down the stairs. I'm like, this is a very boy thing to do.
It's a
But
very
that's
boy.
kind of the world that our boys, yeah, have kind of grown up in, where that's their game is like shoving suitcases downstairs because that's what happens on a luggage carousel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. No,
But
that's super cute.
yeah.
So
They yeah, so it sounds glamorous. I will say this though. I always look forward to getting home to my own bed.
yeah.
There is something about having a place to call home. It is nice to be able to travel. Time differences make it challenging. I'm often getting up at 4:30 in the morning, which, by the way, if you do that for work, that's fine. I like to get up at more like 7 or 7:30 in the morning. But
Yeah.
while I'm over here, I typically get up at 4:30 in the morning. There are times where I'm getting up in the night to deliver a corporate webinar because it's at say 11 a.m. Eastern time, and that's like the middle of the night. But while I'm over here in Australia, I don't mind doing that because I love what I do. But it's not all glamour. There's definitely ups and downs and challenges with it as well.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. I do, 'cause we have about 7 or 8 minutes left. So I want to circle back to just, I guess we're gonna have to do like a blanket thing of your story. You know, like I don't know where the origin was. I, you know, let's.
Well, I'll give you the coconut size nutshell. I joke that I was a failure of 1980s birth control. My mom had an IUD, but I was still conceived. They're hoping for a girl. They got a boy, and I was born at 26 weeks and nearly died. So, had a pretty funny start to life. I was born at home. My dad saved my life. I was born like I was like 2 pounds. He did like pinky finger CPR
Oh,
kind of
wow.
thing. Hospital said don't go visit him because he might die. We don't want you to get attached. Like that was my start in life.
Oh.
Obviously, I beat the odds.
Yeah.
So, grew up in a small town. Left that small town. Went to university, studied nanotech, or studied chemistry, became a nanotech researcher. Left that, became a marine engineer. Along the way, somewhere I met my wife, who was Australian. There's a great story there, but that'll have to come another time. There is like kind of a movie-like story in terms of how we met, but that was fun. We took off and started traveling the world because I just got tired of jobs, I guess. I have ADHD as well, and so I don't fit well into jobs. It's not that I'm
None
not a
of
good
us
person, but
do.
I just don't. I don't fit well into jobs. While we were living in Mexico, it's very interesting what was happening in Jalisco right now. Like I lived in Guadalajara, and we knew that like the cartels had like mansions in Zapopan, which is this rich neighborhood in Guadalajara. But while we were in Mexico, we met a guy from South Africa, and he, we sort of stayed in touch. Like we lived in Mexico together in the same city. When we moved to Poland to live over there, he ended up coming to Poland and living with us for a little while. And we eventually, that's how we kind of ended up going down to South Africa to do some work down there. So we were working for a nonprofit. It was a secular organization, but a nonprofit organization helping underprivileged youth. And we were working out on a nature reserve. And one night I was just heading back to the instructor's cabin and four guys jumped me. So they
Wow.
just tried to beat me to death. And they didn't know me. I didn't know them. It kind of came out of nowhere. Nothing in life really prepares you to go through stuff like that. But that night I had this very, I mean, obviously God spared me that experience. How do you get the strength to fight off four guys? I don't know. I mean, I'm a big guy, but I'm not that good.
Right.
And so, obviously God intervened at some point. They got a lot of good hits and I was probably one hit away from being unconscious, in which case they would have just finished me off.
Wow.
So in that, though, of course, nothing really prepares you for the trauma of that. I didn't even, trauma wasn't even a word in my vocab, like it wasn't even in my vocabulary. So I, at first there's the whole like, hey, they don't win, blah, blah, blah. Like we're okay. But like things kept compounding while we were living in South Africa, more stuff happened. None quite so violent and direct as that. But trauma just sort of compounds. And so eventually we had to leave because I was gonna have a nervous breakdown. And so we did, we moved back to Australia, lived over there for a while, worked on a cotton farm, went back to Turkey where my brother lives. We're kind of this, we live all over the place, our family. That one of the nights when I was in Turkey, it was about 6 months after this had happened, and I just got tired of being angry all the time. Like I wanted to kill people. I never actually did. I'm actually a pretty nice guy. Hopefully that comes across. But I wanted to kill people. It wasn't that I was like seeking it out, but I was like, and I knew that like I this has to change. This isn't who I am. I don't like these thoughts. I don't like what's happening in my head. I don't understand what's happening in my head. Like again, there was no language, there was no nothing like that. So I actually made the decision that I was going to forgive these guys. I didn't actually go back for the court case. Three out of the four were caught. They'd murdered a guy the night before. This was
Wow.
going to be the next one on their list, basically. But I survived, so they wanted me to come back and testify, basically. But I was just too, I couldn't, I mentally just wasn't there,
Yeah.
kind of thing. but I made the decision to forgive these guys. That was a process. It didn't happen overnight, but I was tired of being angry all the time. I was tired of, like, wanting to inflict violence on them, hoping to see them again and somehow inflict violence where the tables were turned, or just set traps for people to somehow take, like, it's crazy where the mind can go
Of
once it's
course.
been damaged like this.
Yeah.
And so part of my healing process was actually forgive them. And it forgiving them wasn't about justifying what they did or even excusing what they did, but it was letting go of my desire for vengeance, my hatred for them, and even actually not wishing that God would strike them down.
Yeah.
But say, God, just I actually just leave all justice and judgment to you, whatever happens. And so the harder part was actually forgiving myself. So I went through that. I became a binge eating food addict. I didn't, and of course I didn't know this is what I was doing to cope with my trauma. Like, it was a very maladaptive behavior. So it was very hard on myself. I really began to hate myself. Of course, the anxiety, the depression, things like that. So these massive kind of mental health struggles. Again, the theme that we come back to is I wasn't equipped. I didn't have language. I didn't know what a lot of this stuff was. I grew up in we'll say a very small sort of insular Christian denomination that's not that well known, except it's under FBI investigation, but that's a story for another time too.
Interesting.
There's a lot of weird stuff in my life.
Yeah.
I've been through a lot, we'll say. But again, this is how you end up kind of where you are. And so I had to then start the process of, like, trying to heal my relationship with myself and relearn, like, my relationship with God. And this is why I say, like, God's not, like, if he was going to strike me down, this would have happened a long time ago.
Right.
But instead, it was like in each of these different experiences, he was taking me through these things. So I went into business with someone who was another Christian, thought he was like a very close friend of mine, a brother in Christ, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Long story short, took advantage of me, cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars, lost everything. But it was actually probably harder to forgive that, pardon me, to forgive that, because that was a betrayal.
Right.
It wasn't just
Personal.
a random attack. This was personal.
Yeah.
This was betrayal. This was manipulation. This was, and but then I had to learn about God's provision. So what do you do when you lose everything? You got nothing, no job, mountain of debt, and nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
And so, but ironically, it's the thing that, like, pushed me into what I'm doing now. So,
Yeah.
through various means, God provided, and I didn't, it barely staved off bankruptcy. 7 years later, I was out of debt, which is pretty impressive.
Congrats on
And
that.
so,
Yeah.
yeah, not an easy thing to do, but
No.
I'm also stubborn and very persistent. And so, a lot of hard work to get there. But the way that I would sort of put it, and then 3 years ago, I had a crippling accident. I had a freak cycling accident that, now I've had two motorcycle accidents too, and a car accident. So there's some physical traumas, that exist too.
Yeah.
So my body's holding a lot of different things. And it was very difficult because I'd lost over 100 pounds. I lost 120 pounds. I was, like, fit. My whole business, in one sense, was built around the guy that, like, went through and rebuilt himself and things like that,
Yep.
only to be crippled and literally, I can't stand, can't walk, can't sit, have to lay down with my feet elevated, like, just in all kinds of pain, like, trying to figure out what is chronic pain, how do I live with chronic pain, like, what does this even mean,
Wow.
that kind of thing. So that's one other aspect that's not really listed in my Podmatch profile, but
Yeah.
the whole chronic pain journey. And going, like, again, why? Why?
Yeah.
And so, but each one of these different experiences, these are kind of like keystone experiences in a sense in life, where each one of these things has equipped me in a different way to work with people,
The refining
and be
fire.
kind of the depth of work that I do.
Yeah.
It's like we don't really get out of life like just kind of laying down peacefully. I'm like I'm we walk out of life with a lot of scars, basically.
Yeah. Well, I think this is incredible. You have done so much. I do want to give everybody a little bit of wisdom from you so they can kind of get inside access to number one, tell us how they can find you, how they can work with you, how they can follow your journey. But I want to ask you this, because I mean, I just think you're incredible. And yeah, this was the wrong show. I have so many other podcasts that I think I need to bring you on because, first of all, do you have your own? We need to launch your podcast. I would listen to it. But what's the biggest lie that people believe about why they can't change? And what is the truth that you could tell them that you wish they knew right now?
Honestly, what do I wish I knew years
Yeah.
earlier is that like I'm not actually broken, and I'm a lot more resilient than maybe I understood. But the hardest experiences are required to bring you through that. But the beauty of it is that we're not asked to go through this by ourselves. So where I am today is not a product necessarily of me. And yes, I have these gifts that were given to me. God gave me a pretty darn good brain. I can't take the credit. I got it free of charge, right? I've been given these gifts. And so we're not broken. God is a redeeming God. And the suffering that we go through in his care becomes not only redemption, but a means with which we can encourage others. And so this isn't to say it's fun or it's enjoyable to go through suffering and experiences that break us. But it's not the end of the road if we trust the experience to God.
No, that's amazing. Where can people find you? I will share links in the show notes, you guys.
I was gonna say, I'm sort of hard to find right now, not
Oh.
impossible, because I have some new things in development,
Okay.
basically, that are still kind of under the radar. I happen to be I'm gonna say, without sounding too pompous, I'm fairly in demand, which means that like my calendar is quite full. I always make time for these, though. I love this. I'm not famous, just in case anyone's thinking, but I just mean like people who know me and know that I'm good at what I do, so I stay quite busy professionally. But there is a website called freedomnutritioncoach.com. That's the easiest place to connect with me right now while my new stuff is kind of under development, basically. The podcast that I did have is called Between the Before and After. It's still available for viewing. It's been on hiatus for a period of time, but it was me exploring people's stories of going through difficulty in coming out the other side of it. So things that are like similar to me, there's all kinds of inspiring stories on there. Like, there's 135 episodes or so. So there's a lot of stories to explore.
Nice. That's incredible. Well, Jonathan, I just have to say it out loud because that's what I do here. You are special because you didn't let your story end at the worst chapter. You have
That's a great way
survived.
of putting it.
You have survived what should have broken you, and instead of burying it, like you've turned it all into this incredible roadmap for other people. And that is not common. That is not easy, but you are showing my audience what is possible, and that matters more than a lot of people can let themselves believe on the hard days, okay? The way you've done all of this, you show up, your energy is genuine. I'm super honored, and for you guys listening, thank you so much for supporting this show, and because I'm honored to get to sit across from incredible people like Jonathan. Like I'm blown away right now. I love his story. It's just I'm happy to be connected to people, and I wouldn't be here without you guys and everything that you've done. So if you guys are listening right now, here's what would make you special for this seat. It's not a polished story, just a real one. You don't need to be on the other side of it yet. You just need to be willing to say it out loud. Like, this is who I am and this is what I'm building. Your mess right now is the message. Your survival is the credential. You show up even scared, uncertain, figuring it all out. We all ebb and flow out of that space. And that is exactly the kind of courage that this show is made for. So if something is stirring in you right now, if you felt yourself in any part of this conversation, okay, it is your turn. Get in the hot seat and come and tell us why you're special. Hit subscribe so you don't miss the next arena moment, okay? Share the episode with someone who needs to hear it. And when you're ready to step up, you guys know where to find me. Jonathan, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you for hosting. Appreciate it.